Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. today. Brian Godawa joins us here in this third hour to talk about the movies that we're seeing on the big screen and the little screen. So many more of us are watching our movies at home, renting them, Netflix or Blockbuster or whoever we're getting these things from. If you're like me, if you really must see it on the big screen, it really has to pass a pretty strict set of criteria before I actually would go out, plunk down the money, take the time, and endure the sticky floors. Although I love watching movies on the big screen, fewer and fewer movies actually get me out to the theater. More of them, I'm willing to wait, especially when it's only a couple months turnaround to watch it at home. We'll be talking about some of those that you watch at home, as well as on the big screen here in this third hour of Issues, etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850. Or 1-800-730-2727. I saw Star Wars Episode 3. It's always hard to say Episode 3 because this is really 6. But I saw it. I was a little disturbed. I mean, I thought it was great in terms of its special effects, but I was a little disturbed by the message that seemed to be running through the bottom of this movie and sticking its head up about every 5 minutes. Even though the movie was supposed to be about Darth Vader, it seems like they were making a movie about something else. Cinderella Man, I've heard great things about this boxing film. The Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, have not seen the movie, but my daughter just finished reading the book and now reading the second part of this book. I loved Hitch. Well, I like both the guys who were in this. I like both of the guys who were in this movie. You didn't see this, Hitch? You wouldn't. You're one of those bachelor guys. Well, I liked it. My wife was not so hot on it. We're going to be talking about all those movies with Brian Godawa. Brian, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Let's start with the one that was supposed to be really, really big, and I don't know how it did in the box office, but I was less than completely impressed, and that's Star Wars Episode 3.
Yeah, Star Wars Episode 3 is pretty much, you know, the turning point of Darth Vader. It's the story of how Darth Vader ultimately, you know, became who he is, how he fell, how he descended into his madness. And I think on that level, it's a more interesting story certainly than the previous two, because it actually has to do with some internal character turmoils that are somewhat interesting. The previous two just were so hopelessly boring to me that filled with all these political just politics basically is what it was about. It was pretty boring. But on the new Star Wars, it was there's a couple of interesting things. One is that I didn't like it really myself either. The only Star Wars movies I liked were the first two, Star Wars and New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. But on this one, you know, what you have is a little bit more psychological character profiling going into that. But, you know, it's still hopelessly mired in all this big political stuff that's going on. But the political stuff is sort of interesting in that it is an analogy for Hitler's Germany. Basically, everything that the emperor was doing as he became emperor, you know, as he moved from chancellor to emperor, was what Hitler did, you know. And so in that sense, it's sort of got a historical connection with this, which is kind of interesting, you know.
No, it's interesting. I got to interrupt. I didn't see that in the movie. What I saw was a commentary on a Republican-controlled Congress and White House. That's what I saw. Now, I don't know if I was just reading too much into it, but it seemed to be an overt analogy to American politics. Did you catch any of that, Brian?
Well, you know, I would agree with you that movies are not created in a vacuum. They're often always reflecting what's going on at the time, and certainly someone's political viewpoint, especially someone like George Lucas, I wouldn't put it past him to do that. I like to have you tell me what it was, because I didn't see that. I really saw more of the Hitler stuff, because it was literally, you know, the things that Hitler did. You know, he faked a fire in the Reichstag and he assumed total powers in order to help Germany get back on course. And then when he did, he became the dictator, and just like the emperor does in this movie. And then there was the Night of the Long Knives, where he killed all of his potential enemies. And of course, the emperor does this in this movie as well. So I saw those comparisons. But I'd love you to, you know, I mean, I'm not disagreeing, actually. I'd love you to enlighten me to the comparisons.
Maybe I was just misinterpreting the very same references that you saw I just did not have Nazi Germany in view, and I think it's probably what was going on there. One of the things.
Actually, no, we're probably both right, because the way Hollywood perceives Republican Party, they actually do think it's like Nazism. So maybe he was trying to make that link.
I don't know. I would love to know from Lucas what he was trying to do. Suffice it to say, would you agree that there was that Lucas in this movie, and he really is the guy who controls the content of these movies down to the smallest details, that Lucas in this movie is speaking to our present day context? He's just not writing about what happened in a galaxy far, far away a long, long time ago.
Absolutely. People have to realize that sci-fi movies are powerful metaphors for what is going. Sci-fi movies about the future, or in this case, it's the past. But you know, I mean, technologically, it's far more advanced from us. But they're sci-fi movies are metaphors for the present and where the present will lead if we follow a certain course. That's pretty much what they're about. So they are. Yes, they're often commentaries on the present. As a matter of fact, even historical movies are often commentaries on the present. They're means by which you can address current issues and by placing them in a past context. That's very, very common.
Now, one of the things that you note in your review of Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Sith, is one line that stuck out to me like a sore thumb, in which, in a conversation between the young Darth Vader-to-be and his mentor, now-turned-enemy Obi-Wan Kenobi, Obi says, only a Sith, that is, those Jedi who have devoted themselves to the dark side, only a Sith deals in absolutes. What was the message there? What's the worldview at work there?
Yeah, I think Anakin at that time said something like, you are either for me or against me, which of course is, I think, possibly veiled reference to Jesus. But certainly he has that extreme viewpoint, and Obi says, yeah, only a Sith deals in absolutes. And I think at that juncture, you know, I think it's sort of expressing Lucas's postmodern relativistic, you know, worldview that, you know, it's, and I think in that sense you might be right too in terms of the political views and such. Those who believe in conservative traditional morality tend to think in black and white and absolutes and the typical liberal Hollywood viewpoint of the rest of the world, red state America, that they're ignorant because of that. And yet, ironically, mere moments later, or mere minutes later, Obi-Wan tells Anakin that the Chancellor is evil, which is, of course, an absolute statement. and then we find the typical contradiction of postmodernism that, you know, or the any kind of relativistic rejection of absolutes, ultimately that person turns around and is themselves absolutistic in their own system. They're merely proposing their absolutes over another person's absolutes. So that's the movie's loaded with philosophical contradictions that are just even more so than previously, I think. It almost rises to the level of absurdity.
One other question on the Sith movie, and that was the reason that Lucas finally decided to end the character arc of Anakin Skywalker, and he goes from being well-intentioned to thoroughly evil, or at least until the last movie. He becomes bad in order to do good. He becomes bad in order to save his secret wife. What is Lucas trying to say there?
Well, you know, I mean, in some ways I certainly love the ambiguities and ironies of life, you know, or maybe not love them, but I'm certainly interested in them, because life is often, we experience a lot of ironies and ambiguities, and I think that there's a certain amount of room for that. I think in this case, in terms of the big picture of Lucas, you know, I think it's really more an expression of the Eastern Taoistic view that the light side, the dark side, the yin and the yang are both intimate expressions of one another. And, you know, I mean, ultimately there really is no good and evil. They're just different sides of the same coin, and they're just as much a part of reality as each other. And so in a very real sense, you know, the savior, you know, a savior can come forth out of its opposite, the devil, you know, and that's that whole Eastern viewpoint that just sees good and evil as interacting opposites, not in the way that we see them as absolute good and evil, but as necessary yin and yang.
Brian Goodow is our guest. Folks, have you seen Star Wars Episode 3? Give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Chuck calls from his car. Chuck, welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Chuck.
The statement that you quoted before from Obi-Wan Kenobi, only a Sith sees things in absolutes, is itself an absolute statement.
Yeah.
Because it uses the term only.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Does this kind of show, and thank you very much, Chuck, does this kind of show, Brian, that that Lucas is kind of an armchair philosopher? He likes these things that sound profound, but when you examine them in the light of clear reason, they just don't make any sense.
No, yeah, absolutely. In fact, interestingly, too, later, there's one good moment where Anakin responds to this accusation of evil, you know, and of course Anakin's the dark side, right? And he says, from my point of view, the Jedi are evil. And that reminds me of the Harry Potter line, you know, where he, you know, the evil, the bad guy says there are no absolutes, there's only power. And I think that's a truthful statement, that evil people believe that, you know, truth is relativistic. But, of course, they just criticized that earlier. And then the bad guy also says that the Jedi are narrow-minded and dogmatic. And so... now you have, it sort of like goes back and forth. Well, who's absolutes, who's narrow-minded, who's dogmatic? It just bounces back and forth. So, yeah, I think Lucas is, he's a typical Hollywood celebrity type where, you know, he feels the emptiness of the Hollywood world and reality that he is a part of, and he seeks a spiritual fulfillment, you know, like we all do. And, you know, he just finds it in this Eastern viewpoint, but I question whether he's really, really examined it fully.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Paul calls from his car. Paul, welcome. Paul, welcome.
I just saw episode 3 yesterday for Father's Day, and I came away with the same impression Brian did right after they said that about absolutes. The other guy talks about how the Chancellor is evil. What I left the theater struck by was ultimately how shallow this whole story really is. It's a very simplistic fantasy, good versus evil. I think it is good versus evil. If you recall in Episode 6, Luke saves his father by appealing to the good still left in him. But I was struck by the fact if you sit with one of Tolkien's books or, you know, the trilogy, there's so much more depth there. And in older movies, they didn't have all these special effects to fall back on to help develop the story. I don't know if it helps or hurts. And so they had to rely much more on the acting. I was once again kind of appalled at just how generally poor the acting is and the actual plot and story development is. I mean, it was a great movie for special effects. Yeah. I also found, I have to say this, very satisfying, finally, to have the whole story wrapped up.
And done and over with.
Yeah, I told my son John, we were sitting next to each other, I said, John, I was 1 year older than you were when I saw my first Star Wars movie. I was 14. So I said, finally, I'm 43, I finally get the whole story.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Paul. Brian.
And I don't want to keep talking about this, it's just not worth the time. Let's talk about some other movies.
All right. Good. I thought the acting was very poor as well.
Yeah.
All right, another one in which you might have other things to say is Cinderella Man. It's out on the big screen. What's the story of this film, and what's the worldview of this film?
I love Cinderella Man. It's based on a true story about a boxer who ended up winning the heavyweight championship of the world, but he was basically an underdog, a guy who, his name was Braddock. Yeah, James Braddock. And during the Great Depression, and he becomes an inspiration for America because in the middle of this depression, here's a man who's a blue-collar guy from, you know, I think the Bronx or something, and he just works his way up to become the heavyweight champion, and he's basically the underdog, you know, and America loves the underdog. But also, he's a man of family, conviction, integrity, and values. This is a very profoundly pro-family film. I don't know if these pro-family organizations, you know, like Focus on the Family, so I don't know if they're supporting it, but they better be, because this movie really elevates this man's marriage as being, you know, the most important thing in his life. I mean, certainly it competes a bit with the boxing, but the boxing is a means. Boxing, in many sports movies, the sport becomes the idol. You know, you've got The Natural, you've got The Legend of Bagger Vance, and all these sports movies, and, the Kevin Costner one, Field of Dreams.
Yeah.
And it's just idolatry. But in this case, here's a man who boxes because he can't do anything as well as he can box, and all he really wants to do is to feed his family. I mean, literally, that's the only reason why he does it. He endangers his own life, and so we have a man where that stuff is a means to an end, and the family is his most treasured possession in his life, and it's just beautiful. It's, you know, it's an epic. It's for guys. It's for girls. Now, you know, I personally don't care for boxing. I don't think it's a good sport because of the nature of the violence, that intended violence is part of the sport. But I also see the reality of a story about a man who does what he has to do. He doesn't have many options, and he does what he does best at, and he tries to make it through his life doing that, and I respect that greatly.
Folks, have any of you seen Cinderella Man? I want to hear from you. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. For the person who says, look, I can't get past, this would be my wife, I can't get past two guys pummeling each other 4 minutes on end on the screen. It's too painful for me to watch, and I won't get the story out of this because of the violence. What do you say?
Well, maybe it isn't for you then. Maybe it isn't. You know, like I said, I don't entirely agree with it as a sport, but this is a true story that really happened. And here was a man who, as best as he could, tried to make his way to fend for his family and provide for his family. And even if he wasn't right in everything he did, he was a man of conviction and integrity. And so, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, if you can't get past the pummeling, then don't see it. But if you see it as sort of the necessary evil in this man's life that he's trying to cope and make it through, then you can definitely recommend the movie.
Well, Brian, you and I and the caller, Paul, were disappointed with the acting in the Sith movie. Talk a bit about Russell Crowe's acting ability.
This is another, you know, Oscar-nominating performance. He's like the finest actor of the last decade, you know. And so he can do anything. He can act just about any part and make it come alive. And he does so in the story of a blue-collar guy. He just captures the whole heart and spirit of a blue-collar man fighting in a world that's against him. And he's just brilliant.
Is he an actor to watch, Brian, in the sense that he seems to make, although he's got a somewhat messed up personal life, mm-hmm. he seems to make very good choices about the kind of movies
yes.
that he makes, especially the worldviews represented in those movies.
Yeah, he's very similar to Tom Hanks. He chooses movies that and Harrison Ford, you know, he sort of chooses these movies of that the common man can connect with, the epic style, the romantic epic, the underdog, you know, that kind of a thing, or troubled men who have to overcome their fears. He's not afraid, in other words, to play a character who has great weakness, because he understands that our humanity is where we really find and connect with a certain understanding of redemption. Because, you know, these perfect slick back type of stories, like a, you know, like maybe at Tom Cruise movies, you know, like a Mission Impossible or something like that, those are just empty action movies. But Crowe, even when he picks an action movie, he picks a character who's flawed, a character who's not perfect or whatever. And but he just has a realism about him that these other superstars like Tom Cruise can just never achieve.
We're talking about Hollywood movies on the big screen, and as you're watching them at home, Brian Godawa is our guest. He's a screenwriter in Southern California. He's authored the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin, and this is Issues Etc. We've got a few minutes here before we go to our first break, Brian. My daughter just finished reading the book, Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, and she's now reading the sequel to it. What was the movie like?
Well, the movie was very interesting. I actually recommend it. It's a story of a group of young girls in high school, and they're about to enter into a summer, and it just so happens that all of them are going to different parts of the world. So they're best of friends, and they're all different types. you know, artist to a jock, a chubby one to a skinny one, all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it's basically a young chick flick, but I still recommend it. I think there's great, great relationship stuff in there. But all four of the girls go to different parts of the world, and they sort of keep connected with each other by mailing a pair of jeans that magically happens to fit each of them, and the jeans become a symbol for, you know, what good is going to happen in their life, you know. And some of them experience bad, some experience good, but it's all about coming of age and what does it mean to mature. And interestingly, this is a young teen movie where sexuality and losing your virginity is dealt with, because, of course, it is part of reality, but it's shown to be what it is. That is an empty experience that is not for young people until marriage. Of course, it doesn't deal with the marriage, but it definitely talks about, you know, sexuality for young teens as being inappropriate and empty for them. So I was amazed that was in this movie. But in a way, I wasn't, because it was written by Delia Ephron, who is a sister of Nora Ephron, who they did movies like, you know, When Harry Met Sally and Sleepless in Seattle. So these women are real, you know, have a more responsible sense of that sexuality in relationships.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Sandy calls from Alton. Hi, Sandy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I would like to ask your guest's opinion of Napoleon Dynamite. That's not been on the big screen for a while now, but I was interested in seeing it when I heard it's kind of a cult classic with the high school and college kids.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
The humor is very sophomoric. However, the theme of the redemption of this outsider nerd teenager, that I think some of the mundaneness of his life, I think we can all look back at some mundaneness of our own life, and I think this is what maybe some of the young people watching him are identifying with. However, he redeems himself by diminishing himself even further for his friend.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly.
Sandy, thank you very much. Your thoughts, we've got about a minute here before we go to our break. Your thoughts on, I loved this movie, Napoleon Dynamite.
So
the kids certainly loved it.
Yeah, and basically Sandy expressed it, you know, the heart of it, the redemption found in the character. It's all about quirky. It's all quirky little comedy stuff. It's totally safe, and yet it's very profound, but I think it touches all of us, because we all have a side of the outsider in us, don't we? Whether we're geeks or whatever we are. I know I've felt like a geek I've been a geek in many ways and aspects, and certainly feeling like the outsider makes you really identify with this movie. I think that's what's connecting with people, and how overcoming your own like she expressed, you know, overcoming your own selfishness for another person is really a powerful, good value.
Bob, we'll talk with Bob here and then get the answer to his question or comment on the other side of the break. Bob calling from St. Louis. Welcome. You've got less than a minute here, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
When I saw the last Star Wars movie, at the point where they say the Sith only deal in absolutes, a scene from my college watercolor painting class came to my mind when 3 weeks in a row our watercolor instructor would face the bulletin boards and look at our paintings and make an absolute statement about a painting. And realizing he said an absolute statement, he'd turn around, put his finger up, and say, "But there are no absolutes, you know."
Interesting, Bob. Thank you very much. When we come back from this break, Brian Goodell will respond there, and we'll continue to talk about the movies that are on the big screen and elsewhere. Kingdom of Heaven, The Interpreter, one I just watched, Be Cool. We'll be right back.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Martin Luther writes this: next to the preaching of the gospel, in which God speaks with us and gives us all his grace and blessings, the highest and foremost work we can do is to speak with him through prayer and receive from him what he gives. By our prayer, we seek and find what we are to receive. While many books claim to be about Christian prayer, or to offer a form of prayer, our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for June, A Lutheran Book of Prayer, is a genuine prayer book. Prayers, psalms, and other resources for your daily prayer life. To order A Lutheran Book of Prayer, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, or go to our website, issuesetc.org. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Lutheran Book of Prayer, or our website, issuesetc.org.
Homosexual behavior. Is the Bible clear?
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the powerful book, Genesis and the Decay of the Nations. Well, Ken, I think the Bible is very clear, especially in the book of Romans, about the sinfulness of homosexual behavior.
Well, I agree. But even some supposedly conservative theologians now question whether Romans chapter 1 is actually teaching against homosexual behavior. I was a keynote speaker at a Bible conference in England, and I just spent 3 days establishing the foundational importance of Genesis to all doctrines, such as marriage. Now another speaker at the conference was speaking on Romans and then introduced the topic of homosexual behavior. This church leader said that there's really no clear teaching in the New Testament against such behavior. He went on to say that he'd wished Paul had written Romans differently. Besides the fact that Romans is God's word, written just as God intended for it to be written, how could this speaker make such a comment? Well, a person in the audience stood up and said, "Surely the foundation of marriage from Genesis makes it clear that homosexual behavior is wrong." The audience discovered that this Christian leader didn't believe in Genesis, which is why he couldn't explain Paul's teaching in Romans, which is founded in Genesis. Homosexual behavior is sin, but only if Genesis is literally true.
This topic is also touched on by Ken Ham in his new booklet, Evolution, Creation, and the Culture Wars. It's available free when you go to our website, AnswersRadio.com. Read Ken Ham's free booklets at AnswersRadio.com.
This is Dr. John Tape with the Media Minute. A myth that is often perpetuated in the media is that might makes right. According to this false notion, power has the ability to determine morality. For some, it is the power of the government. If the government says abortion is allowed, then it's okay. For others, it's the power of science. If we have the ability to clone humans, then that's what we should do. Just because we can do something doesn't mean we should. Christian discretion is called for in making moral decisions. Yet such discretion is woefully lacking in the plots of most sitcoms and reality shows. Jesus loves your children very much. He died on the cross for them. He also wants them to make good moral decisions. You can help them do that by teaching them that might doesn't make right. This Media Minute is brought to you by the Christian Media Literacy Institute at cmli.org.
You know that for any career, you need education and training. The Educational Opportunity Centers can assist you in learning more about your interests and strengths, planning your career goals, and educational objectives. EOC has career assessment centers at the Forest Park and Belleville locations. Contact EOC today for more information on post-secondary education and how that education fits into your future.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in the next 25 minutes, we continue our conversation with Brian Gadawa, a screenwriter in Southern California and author of the book Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. We're trying to do a little bit of that as we review some of the summer movies that are on the big screen and the little screen as well. You can read Brian's movie blog. He has very helpful and extensive reviews of the movies that he's watched at Gadawa.com. It's GODAWA.com, Gadawa.com. Our call-in numbers, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bob was on the line before echoing some of the no absolutes, but yes, of course, there are absolutes kind of mindset that seems to play through so many of these movies. Your thoughts, Brian?
I lost track there.
Well, I mean, he relates a college experience in an art class about someone making an absolute statement and then reminding the students that there are no absolutes. Is this the basic fundamental inconsistency that we're going to find in any film or play that tries to push the idea that there are no absolutes?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, Kingdom of Heaven, ostensibly about the Crusades.
Yep.
Is this a movie about the Crusades or any Crusades that history knows of?
Well, I find it hard to recommend the movie because it's basically a humanistic interpretation of the Crusades. And what I mean by that is that much like Troy was a humanistic dismissal of religion, the movie Troy, so this movie does the same thing. And it basically details the crusade of 1184. And, you know, I mean, for those who know, there were many crusades in all different versions, and whichever one they picked, they happen to focus on a young blacksmith, Balian, who becomes a knight and makes a pilgrimage to Jerusalem in order to sort of get forgiveness for his dead wife's suicide. And so he's a man who's deeply troubled and doesn't really have much faith, and he gets picked up by a knight and trained to become a knight. But then when he goes to Jerusalem, and he finds a lot of corruption in the knighthood. Now, there are good knights in this movie, and I must say that the movie has some balance. It's not entirely, you know, all evil knights, which is so typical of Hollywood. There are good knights in the movie. But by in general, by and large, the Muslims are, you know, as the Muslims fight the Catholics, and they're by and large, they're portrayed more positively than the knights are. There are good knights and bad knights, but there are mostly just good Muslims in this movie. They deal with they sort of show one-sided view of the negative things that the knights did, but they don't show the fact that the Muslim soldiers did the same exact things. For instance, when the Crusaders were in control of the city, they would tax the Muslims or the non-Christians. Well, the Muslims are famous for what they call dimitude, where they would tax or execute or enslave you if you did not pay the taxes if you weren't a Muslim. But they didn't show that side of the Muslims, so it was sort of one-sided in that sense. And ultimately, at the end of the story, what happens is you have a man who goes through the religious war and concludes, hey, all you guys are fighting from different gods, but you're fighting for the same things. I'm fighting for, you know, the people of the city and what really matters. And all this religion is just relative. It's just relative because everyone thinks they own the city, and yet, you know, your churches are built on their mosques are built upon Jewish temples, and it goes all the way down. And so what's the difference? And so it just sort of concludes very humanistically that, you know, can't we just love each other? And love, it's basically the brotherhood of man. You know, the brotherhood of man is going to be the answer to all these God, you know, God religious wars and such. And unfortunately, you know, what they don't deal with is the fact that the 20th century brought us, you know, what the logical conclusion of humanism was, and that is, you know, atheistic, you know, without religion, atheistic regimes like communist Russia and Mao and Pol Pot and all these guys, you know, they basically killed 100 times more than any men were killed in a religious war. So it's just sort of a typical humanistic anti-religious, you know, film, unfortunately.
Folks, have you seen The Kingdom of Heaven? Give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's talk about a few rentals. One that just came out on DVD, Be Cool, it's supposed to be a sequel to Get Shorty with some of the same characters in an all-star cast, and that's what attracted me to it. What did you think, Brian?
I was thoroughly unimpressed and would not recommend seeing the movie. I like Get Shorty. I thought it was pretty good. But
yeah.
I think in this story, basically, evil really is attempted to be made cool. It's just, and I'm sorry, it's not cool. To me, and so therefore it really repulses me. You know, the leader of the story, you know, Chili Palma, he remains a criminal without repentance to the end, you know, and I'm sorry, but that's not worthy of being a hero to me in my mind. And you know, the gangsta culture is, you know, there's some great jokes in there, but it's basically all just lighthearted, and ultimately cool is crime in this story. And for that reason, I just really can't recommend it. And it just didn't have the heart of the first movie anyway.
You know what I found repulsive? And I got no real problem with profanity in movies as long as it's in context.
Yeah.
But there was an incident here where they're driving along talking about how movies get rated.
Yeah.
And the F word is used completely gratuitously only for the purpose of getting a cheap laugh and for getting the PG-13 rating.
Well, yeah, but, you know, I personally kind of find that to be really an ironic humor because it's true. It's the fact that you only can have one F word in a PG-13 movie, and technically that's sort of arbitrary if you think about it, because if the context of a movie is immoral, you know, you don't have to have the F word in there at all, and it should be rated higher, you know, PG-13 or R. You know what I'm saying? And so I have a somewhat different view on that, where I thought it was a commentary. You know, again, I'm in Hollywood, so I see the commentary on Hollywood that it's making. So, you know,
there is the movie, a big person movie made about Howard Hughes called The Aviator. What did you think about it?
Yeah, The Aviator, you know, got some nominations last year for the Oscars. It's a movie that I don't recommend because I again, in terms of the technical details, you know, I think, what's his name played Howard Hughes real well, the young kid from Titanic.
Yeah, that would be Leonardo
DiCaprio. Yeah, I think he did a good job. I was impressed because I didn't think he fit the role well, but he sure acted it well. And you know, I thought Cate Blanchett was just brilliant as Katherine Hepburn. You know, the acting was great. Great, beautiful look to the story. But it was a very interesting story to me because at the end of the day, it's the big picture of the whole thing is it's basically an epic about a very disturbed, mentally deranged man. And I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's a tragedy. It's a study of depravity. But but it's done as a way to like show this man is a great man, and let's watch his descent. But it still sort of elevates him as a great man. And I personally, you know, did not care for it in that sense. But I thought it was a very pretty looking film. It was well done, of course. But it didn't turn me on.
Anyone out there see The Aviator? Give us a call now. We got 20 minutes left with Brian Godawa, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, I saw this one on the big screen, and it's out on DVD now, called Hitch with Will Smith and that guy from King of Queens, Kevin James. What did you think of the movie, Brian?
A wonderful film. I recommend it. It's more for adult viewers, but you know, I think it's a great story about men and women and their relationships, and particularly in being yourself rather than trying to be something else that you're not, to try to manipulate or use people, to try to get people, you know. It's all about Will Smith plays a date doctor, a guy who helps men get women. In other words, helps them to do things that are not necessarily natural to them, but they are tricks of catching women, right? And, of course, you know, so it's got all the great things about the difference between the sexes and great jokes and such. And, of course, the date doctor himself gets in a dilemma because he falls for a woman who's a real tough cookie, and that forces him to look at himself. And I think it's a great, great romantic comedy in that sense. Unfortunately, the first opening sequence of the movie sort of places relationships in the context of sexuality, fornication, which is, I think, inappropriate. But after that point, the rest of the film, the actual story of the hero and the secondary character really are not about sexuality. In fact, they don't have sex at all in the movie. And so in that sense, it's sort of like is the rest of the movie is different than the opening 5 minutes. So, you know, it's not a perfect movie, but I think it's a good movie about romance and loving another person for who they are and being yourself.
The thing I liked about this one, of course, it's not the greatest movie in the world, but I thought it was a sweet movie and great for romantic comedy, which is not usually my genre. But both the male characters, the Hitch character and the guy who he is advising, end up in their own way going through that character arc.
Yeah.
And especially because that Hitch character at the beginning of the movie seems like he's got it all completely together.
Yes.
And then you realize he really doesn't.
Yes, the tricks and the things that you think, you know, it's the old thing of the pickup lines. Yeah, I guess it may work with some lower quality women, but at the end of the day, the quality women, you know, trying to play tricks in order to get someone is ultimately disingenuous, and you should really be yourself and be who you are. And 9 times out of 10, a woman prefers that more anyway. And I think that shows that women, you know, value quality women really care about the character and the person, and they have all different desires. It's not all the same. You can't plug and chug formulas in order to get someone.
Folks, what did you like or dislike about this movie Hitch? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Tell us about Spanglish. This is one of those movies that I kind of classified as a chick flick and didn't see. What can you say about it?
Yeah, Yeah, Spanglish is actually, I think it's a little bit on the level of Hitch. You know, again, it's not a perfect movie. It's the story of a Adam Sandler plays a guy who hires a Spanish maid, basically, you know, and she can't speak English, and so this maid becomes a catalyst in this man's marriage to sort of wake up the marriage and bring it back together again, you know. And in that sense, it's a wonderful love story about reviving love, marriage love, you know. Unfortunately, it's not got the greatest of ethics involved in it, you know. The man falls for this woman, but she does turn him away and says, you know, and forces him to go back to his own wife, you know. But they sort of have that moment in the story, that what I call the Bridges of Madison County moment, where you know, it's this love connection between two people who shouldn't, and they just sort of keep that. It's not a sexual thing, but it's definitely a connection that they keep to themselves, and that's, you know, that would be the downside of it. But other than that, I think that there's a lot of good relationship elements in the movie, and I recommend it with caution.
What about National Treasure? This is one that seemed to appeal kind of across all of the age groups. Tell us the story of this, and what did you make of this film?
Well, National Treasure is just a great popcorn action movie with Nicolas Cage, who stars as a treasure hunter who's out to actually protect the Declaration of Independence that has a secret map to these riches on it, you know, and the bad guys are trying to get in, and he wants to protect it as well as, you know, find the treasure in addition to protecting the Declaration. And so, you know, it's great laughs, great action. It's actually a good, fun little movie, you know, popcorn movie, not full of a lot, but, you know, the idea of the founding fathers having, you know, being valuable is sort of intrinsic to the movie. I sort of liked it. But one that I would recommend more so is, you know, I get tired with action movies because they're so empty, and the action, the special effects get boring to me if they're not infused with human drama. And the new movie out, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, with Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt, is just a wonderful action movie because there's so much more to it than action. It's all about marriage, and it's actually these two assassins, and they're living secret lives, and they're married to each other, and they don't know that each other is an assassin for a different agency, probably like the CIA and the NSA or something. And and so what happens is one day it turns out that they become each other's target, and so then they set out to kill each other, you know. But what's so great about it is their fighting and their battling with one another is a very clear metaphor for the fighting that goes on in all marriages. And the whole point of the movie is about communication in marriage is how you gain intimacy and ultimately have a good sex life as well. But that's a side point. But it's really about communication in marriage and how necessary it is to be open and honest and all this. And so this is an underwriting value worldview that's driving this otherwise, you know, just purely fun action story, you know. And it's comic book. It's comic book violence. So it's really not it's not offensive in that sense, you know.
It struck me as kind of War of the Roses. You remember that film?
Yeah.
Meets True Lies.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Good analogy.
Any other films that we haven't talked about that you think deserve honorable mention here?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one movie other than Cinderella Man that I just highly recommend is the movie Crash. Crash is a small movie by Paul Haggis, and it might even still be out, but basically it's what I call a providential ensemble piece. It's a story about multiple different stories of different people's lives, like about eight different people, right? And it examines each of their lives, and then none of them are, or very few of them are connected in any way. But the story itself ends up connecting all these people's lives in some intertwined way that they're unaware. And the theme of the movie is racism and all the different levels of our life that racism, prejudice, and bigotry is really a better term. How prejudice and bigotry manifest themselves in every area of life. And what's so great about it is not the cliche movie that is going to be all about, you know, racism of whites against blacks or whites against some minority. It's about racism or bigotry on all sides, of black people against Asians and black people against whites, of white people against blacks. But it's also about, and so it shows how even people who are unbigoted can have an evil or a sinful side to them, and sometimes even bigoted people can have a good side to them. They can be heroic on other levels. And so, in other words, it sort of deconstructs the typical approach to racism. Is if you're bigoted in some way, you're completely, thoroughly evil. And that's just not true. And this movie really delves and brings that out in a very profound, dramatic way. And it's got a lot of language and it's got a lot of impending violence, but there's a lot of redemption in the end and not as much violence as you think is going to happen. And so it's definitely an R-rated movie, not for the squeamish, but I highly recommend it for a strong, strong values movie.
Folks, you'll find Brian Godawa's movie blog on the web at his website, godawa.com, GODAWA.com. Brian Godawa is a Hollywood screenwriter in Southern California, and he is author of the book, Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. We're talking about movie reviews here, those on the big screen and the little screen. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I know we've talked about this one before, but it's out on DVD. It has been for a little while. And I know that you love everything Pixar, The Incredibles. What did you love about this movie?
Oh, I just love The Incredibles. It's such a pro-family film in a world of, in our world, which is, just seems to just be so against family. And you know, it's the story of a family of superheroes where the mom and dad are superheroes who marry, have kids, and the kids have superpowers as well. But you know, it's all about how society, because superheroes save people, but in the midst of saving people, sometimes they do damage to property or people's lives are endangered. But so the superheroes get sued by all the people, and superheroes end up sort of stepping out of life and stopping doing their saving heroics because of that fact. And this story is about one family trying to be normal, trying to suppress their individuality, their unique superpowers, but of course they can't, and it comes out. And so it's all about this, the beauty of family and how family can bicker and argue but stick together and work through their problems together. And so again, it's a realistic portrayal of the family and the difficulties we have, but it ultimately elevates the love and depth that a family have that you can't get elsewhere, you know. And it does that through this funny cartoon or animated story about a family of superheroes.
What about Hotel Rwanda? I've seen this advertised a lot, and it strikes me as basically realism-based film.
Yeah.
What did you think of it?
Yeah, Hotel Rwanda is sort of shades of Schindler's List. I highly recommend the film, but again, it's not for the weak of stomach. I think it's only PG-13, though, so it deals with the atrocities of the Rwandan people murdering close to a million people, 800,000 people, like 10 years ago, and nobody hardly heard about it, nobody hardly cared. And so it's about a black man played by Don Cheadle, who's sort of in the upper crust of society with the whites, and he's at a hotel. And as this atrocity of genocide starts to come down on half the black population against the other half, basically, he starts to realize the evil, and he ends up reluctantly becoming a hero by saving a lot of people by, you know, housing them in the hotel and the like. And so it's an unlikely hero story, and it wrenches your heart to see that this stuff is going on, and it shows you what true heroism is and inspires that in us, and also inspires us to really be more aware of the evils that are going on right now around us.
I've been deeply impressed by the guy who played the starring role in that. He was in several other movies. He was in Ocean's 11 and 12. He mm-hmm. was in Boogie Nights. He was in a bunch of other films. This guy is an amazing actor.
Yeah, Don Cheadle really is. He's quite the actor.
What else are you looking forward to seeing that's on its way out? What would you say if you're looking at the next $12 you got to spend at the movie theater? What you're looking forward to?
Chronicles of Narnia. That's the only one I can think of. Although I'm not a huge fan of the books, and I'm not keeping track of anything. I just want to go there and be surprised. Nonetheless, it's one of my heroes, C.S. Lewis, and I'm interested in seeing how they do it. And I've heard good from Christian friends who are in the business, even working with it in terms of marketing. So we'll see how they do. And hopefully this will also prove again to the world, like The Passion, that there's this whole realm of religious people out there that you can make a lot of money if you just make something positive. But yet again, you know, Hollywood doesn't get it, and they're ready to make The Da Vinci Code. Of course, The Da Vinci Code was a best-selling book, so there's justification there. But nonetheless, it's going to be ultimately attacking Christianity, and I just hope that hope that people just don't go see it because they're not interested in being attacked again.
Okay, someone's getting ready this week. Tuesday's always the big day for DVD releases and things like that. They're getting ready to rent some movies for the weekend, maybe through Netflix or something like that. What three movies would you recommend they rent for the weekend this week?
Oh, boy, that's a tough one. To End All Wars. To End All Wars is the story that I wrote, a true story about prisoners of war under the Japanese in World War II. It's a Schindler's List story. It's harsh. It's R-rated R, but it's a powerful story of redemption, and it has a Christian worldview in it. If you haven't seen it, you got to see it. I would recommend another one that's sort of weird, you know. Be careful. It's called The Machinist. It stars Christian Bale. This is a sort of an art house film that's weird and dark, but it's ultimately very, very redemptive because it's about a man who suffers insomnia and can't eat because of guilt over something in his past, something that he's guilty of.
You know, I've been trying to rent that movie for about 2 weeks now.
Really?
Because I got hooked on Christian Bale after watching American Psycho.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
And I can't get this movie. Everybody wants this movie,
I
The
know,
Machinist.
Man. That's great. But, yeah, The Machinist. It's a very moral movie about moral guilt and how repentance can free you from that. It's really powerful.
Okay, one other recommendation.
Boy. Let's see. What have I seen lately? Not much lately.
What about Coach Carter?
Coach Carter. Oh, yeah, definitely. Highly recommend it. That's right. That's on DVD. Highly recommend Coach Carter. It's a Save the Kids movie. You know, but what's so cool about it is it's all about this inner city school where kids just don't care. And Samuel Jackson plays a guy in a sports store who cares about the kids, and he joins and becomes a coach to try to help them, but he installs discipline. The one thing lacking in their lives is discipline, and it's basically good old hard work, and it gets to the point where if you don't have good grades, you're not going to play on the basketball team. Well, that just totally, you know, everybody gets mad at him because of it, but he ends up being justified because the character and integrity of the kids, as well as achieving it and making it in this world, is not going to be by seeking entitlements and blaming everybody else, but by getting discipline and taking control of your own life and responsibility for your own actions. The only downside is it has a sort of a subtle pro-abortion subplot. You know, it's a minor subplot that I don't care for. But other than that, it's the opposite of Dead Poets Society. Discipline and working together is how you make it, not by being a selfish individualist.
Brian Godawa has a blog where you can read his movie reviews at his website, godawa.com, GODAWA.com. And he has joined us for these movie reviews this afternoon on Issues, Etc. Brian, thanks for being our guest.
Hey, it's great being with you, Don.
Brian Godawa, screenwriter in Southern California, author of this book, Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment. Tomorrow on the program, we'll talk about Healing Touch with Sharon Fish Mooney and the beginning of a series on Vespers, an evening prayer service of historic proportions in the church with Pastor Will Whedon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.